On the programme, a river of sound celebrating and debating the Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland. Hello and welcome to Arts Tonight. The new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland traces centuries of music, music making, musicians, songs, singers and diverse lives. An A to Z from A River of Sound, A Woman's Heart and music associated with the Abbey Theatre to Zosimus, Zrazy and Patrick Zook, and about 2,000 references in between. Editors Harry White and Barra Boydell steered the Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland, or EMIR, through years of making with a team of some 240 contributors, overseeing the largest single research project on music in this country undertaken to date. The making of the Encyclopedia has not been without its controversy, almost inevitable that a work on this scale will provoke expectation and division. And some of this we'll address on tonight's programme. Sean O'Riordan's Misha Era there, one of the entries in the new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland. Joining me in studio to discuss the Encyclopedia is Harry White, Professor of Music at UCD, one of the two general editors of the Encyclopedia, and Dr. Mark Fitzgerald, co-executive editor, who's a lecturer in music at DIT. Harry White, remind us of the genesis of what is now this very handsome two-volume encyclopedia, inspired, I think, by the Encyclopedia of Music in Canada, published, was it in 1981?
Yes, that's exactly right, Vincent. The Encyclopedia of Music in Canada appeared in the early 1980s, and at that time I was a graduate student in Toronto studying musicology, and I wasn't terribly interested in Canadian music, but I was immediately taken by the idea of devoting an encyclopedia to the music of an entire country, of a single country. And that was the first, I suppose, germ of the idea. And then later, when I returned to Dublin to teach, and at the time musicology was more or less an unknown quantity in many aspects of Irish musical life, but it was beginning to surface, the idea was sufficiently strong in my mind to actually write a couple of papers in Canadian and Irish journals advocating the idea of an Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland as something that would allow us to map musical experience.
Two volumes, over 1,000 pages, a project, a huge undertaking. And how did you and your co-editor, Barra Boydell, set about creating the structures, the parameters for this vast and pretty complex and sometimes controversial subject?
I suppose the very first step was that I had just prior to this project becoming real, and it became real through the generosity of Atlantic Philanthropies and through the decisive intervention of Gerard Gillan, who at that point was professor of music in Maynooth, and who seized upon this prospect of research funding to make the encyclopedia real. So immediately upon that breakthrough moment, he had invited me to be general editor of the Encyclopedia along with Barra Boydell. And by then, which is to say the middle of 2003, there was sufficient ballast, as it were, in terms of scholarship and research to actually make this thing real. I mean, no amount of money could generate this without a good deal of scholarly experience. So Barra and I invited Jared in turn to chair an editorial board, and we mustered that fairly quickly. We knew fairly rapidly the kind of people we would like to involve in this in terms of their research expertise, particularly in ethnomusicology, musicology analysis, and so on. And just, as I said, just before this happened, by sheer coincidence, really, I had revisited the idea again, and I had prepared 1,000 sample headwords. I mean, they were notional ideas of what might go into such a project. And it was useful that I'd done so because it gave us a kind of starting point. And then we farmed out these 1,000 headwords to the members of our editorial board. And it took us almost 2 years, in fact, to, in fact, even a little more than that, to expand that list, it went to 3,000 headwords, and then to refine it. And at the end of the day, we were back down to about 2,000. But that was an incredibly testing and interesting process because we consulted on a very wide basis. We talked to our subject editors and our advisory editors, and they talked in turn to potential contributors. So we had a very wide spectrum of opinion as to what should be in the Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland, or EMIR for short.
To what extent then, you know, was the content almost subject to how you would view music in Ireland, as opposed to, we'll say, a group of people getting together and saying, how do we best map a complete picture of music in Ireland? Because it would, many people would feel that that over the years, and you've never been shy about expressing your opinions on music and talking about art music, and again in the introduction to the book you refer to art music as what we generally call classical music.
Yeah.
And you know, again, and we'll hear from Tony Quinn in a while, in the pages of the Journal of Music, JMI formerly, you had somebody like Barry O'Shea say that, you know, Harry White does not have sufficient regard for what we call traditional music.
Right.
And you've talked about the, you know, the ethnic repertoire, etc.
Yeah.
So I suppose there would have been from early on a certain expectation that the book might be tilted towards classical music in Ireland, art music, as you'd say. Did you at all take on board some of those concerns or criticisms in looking to this project?
Absolutely. In fact, I think whatever about my own work in the cultural history of music in Ireland, I think the objective from the very outset with regard to EMIR was to map Irish musical experience as comprehensively as we could. And of course that experience emphatically includes traditional music. But it is the case that traditional music and commercial music have had a very large shout in the cultural history of this country. They have a very high prestige value. They have a very high commodification value. The sound of traditional music is virtually a global signature of Irishness. And although we were extraordinarily attentive to traditional music and had an excellent traditional music editor in the form of Adrian Scahill, there were two things we didn't want to do with EMIR. One was to turn it into a who's who in music, which is a very, very difficult and tricky task to avoid. And the other thing we didn't want to do was to reinforce, as it were, the status quo with regard to music in Ireland. What we did want to do, much more positively, was to represent as comprehensively as we could the agencies of Irish musical experience across history. Now, in attempting to do that, it's inevitable that you cannot comprehensively engage with every aspect of music to the point where you would end up with 6 volumes or 10 volumes, and you would lose the thrust, as it were, or the sense of a shape or sense of a map emerging. One of my favorite sort of watchwords comes from Borges, when he says that if you attempt to make the map as large as the territory you're surveying, it's worse than useless. But I do think that with regard to traditional music and popular music, EMIR is extremely attentive, not out of a sense of duty, but out of a sense of passion and out of a sense of engagement with those musical practices. On the other hand, I freely admit and warmly endorse the idea that a great deal of music that has been neglected, not just in terms of classical music or art music, but church music and other kinds of music in Gaelic culture, music in pre-Christian Ireland, music as the expression of some other agency, usually political or literary and so on, that a great deal of that has lain neglected for a very, very long time. And to me, it's extremely exciting that now that this map has been drawn, that people are attending upon it. People feel, you know, there's too much of this or too little of that, but there is a map now. There is a sense of shape to it.
Harry White, we asked you as well to choose a couple of pieces of music that for you reflect something of, I suppose, your love of music in this country and something of the diversity of the encyclopedia. What would you like us to hear?
Well, it's actually very hard to do that because, you know, EMIR represents such a wide spectrum of musical experience. One such example is Frederick May. May's predicament, really, as a composer in the 1950s sort of illustrates, if you like, the kind of hidden history of a whole tradition of music in this country. And his string quartet, which is certainly his best-known work, has become a kind of icon of that hidden history and of a certain strain of modernism in Irish music, which waited for a very long time and even now has a very small, comparatively small cultural afterlife or echo. But the May Quartet, the opening of the May Quartet, gives you some notion of the musical world, as it were, that he was inhabiting and how far, how distant, as it were, Ireland was from engaging with that music.
The opening of Frederick May's string quartet there, the first musical choice of one of our guests this evening, Professor Harry White. Tonor Quinn, editor of the Journal of Music, joins us from studio in Galway. Tonor, as someone deeply involved in reviewing and providing a critical space for and around music in Ireland, I presume you welcome the publication of this new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland.
I think it's a beautifully produced book, but there are several aspects to it that concern me. There's just far too much that is missing. Dublin and Cork are well served, but there's no entry for example, for music for Galway, for music for Kilkenny. These are key aspects of our musical life. No mention of Music Generation, the National Music Education Programme. No entries for the separate entries for the Gaeltachtaí. The music content of Tidhg Ceathair is not discussed. On Gaeilachadav, where I live in Connemara, which teaches thousands of children, isn't even mentioned. Then there are so many artists that are missing. And even taking into the fact that Harry doesn't want a who's who, but particularly in traditional music, there are too many artists that are missing. For example, Keela, Caoimhín O'Rahilly, Muireann Na Cabhlach, Zoe Conwy, Neely Mulligan, the McKeown brothers, Niall Vallely. And one can't help thinking that if their achievements had been in classical music, they would have been included. There is also a lot of other musicians missing. Alan Smale, the leader of the NSO for 18 years, is missing. The soprano Celine Byrne, the drummer Sean Carpio, Jerry Godley, the promoter, the composer Dave Flynn. And there's lots more. So you actually realise...
What about what is there? Surely we also acknowledge and celebrate what is in there.
I have to finish this point. So you realise the project was actually over-ambitious for a print publication and it should have had a digital-first strategy. For the inspiration for the encyclopedia was actually the Encyclopedia of Music in Canada, and that moved online in 2003. So instead of something dynamic and representative, we have something very incomplete. Now, my last concern that I'll mention here is the use of the term art music throughout to describe classical music. And this makes it very difficult to recommend it to any student of music. It's not a neutral term. It's used in direct contrast to traditional music, and it implicitly suggests that classical music is more sophisticated than other musics. Now, the language used to describe music shapes the reality of our musical life. So in that regard, this book sets us back decades. And instead of something that could project us progressively into the future, it's now something that must be overcome, that stands in our way. And I'm sure that wasn't the intention of the editor, so I don't know why they used that term.
Harry White, two things there. The use of the term art music and then the notion of a digital or online version of the encyclopedia. And this is something we'll talk about later. Surely that would be a very valuable, if you like, companion to this, a forum in which perhaps the encyclopedia could be updated, amended, added to and enriched in a way.
Yeah. Well, I'll take the second question first, as I often say, with regard to the digital, potential digital version. There had been from the outset, and there still is, a very strong commitment to an ultimate digital version of EMIR. And in fact, RILM, the great agency of music information in New York, is very keen to put EMIR online. But the fact is that we wanted... and still do want this book to have a healthy shelf life, because information in itself, the mere retrieval of information, is an endless project. Constantly adding to and including more and more people and more musical agencies and so on will enhance the empirical value of EMIR, but its symbolic value is another matter. And indeed, I think there's an awful lot to be said for a book which is end-stopped before it turns into an open-ended retrieval. So, for example, to mention the Encyclopedia of Music going online in 2003, given that it was previously in print for over 20 years, puts that issue into perspective and growth.
But then the possibility of digitization and going online didn't exist.
That's right. That's right. But nevertheless, they waited a long time before they went online, and so did Grove. Now, that was partly for marketing reasons, but it's also because, as I said, there is no end to updating. The New Grove Dictionary of Music, for instance, is only now, 34 years since it first appeared and 20 years since its, 13 years since its second revised edition, is only now in the process of upgrading and updating its information.
But I think you're saying that you would hope that there will be an online version.
There are plans for that, but that is a second phase. And I'm not in the least little bit taken aback by the idea that as it stands, as it presents itself, it does draw a map. Now, to return to the
use of art, art music to talk about classical music. And again, right. Tony Quinn would say, you know, that in a way flies in the face of a lot of traditional musicians who would regard their music as well, a lot of it as art music.
Yeah, and so would I. And but with all due respect to Tony Quinn's sense of aggrievement, the term art music is internationally in currency to designate what is largely speaking mistakenly called classical music. If the term art music has baggage attached to it, the term classical music has even more baggage attached to it. And whether we sit around from now until doomsday debating the constant need for Irish traditional music to assert its sophistication, to assert its cultural superiority, to assert its ubiquity, or not, the fact is that in the current discourse about music throughout Europe, and in fact throughout the Western world, there is a common sense distinction made between traditional musics and art musics. And at no point in this encyclopedia, and in fact in no point in my own work since the matter has come up, have I ever suggested that in some way traditional music is inferior to art music. And as far as I'm concerned, it is disingenuous, it is troublemaking, and it is discourteous to the whole enterprise of thinking about music constantly to harp on about this distinction. It's not an argument that originates, I'm glad to say, with Tony Quinn or the Journal of Music, but it has been an obsession in Ireland for decades and decades, and it is not one to which I wish to subscribe.
And maybe, though, in a sense, there's a reason why it has been an obsession, because traditional music for so long was undervalued, was underrepresented. So there's perhaps has been an understandable kickback against a perception that it was of lesser value. I'm not saying that you ever thought that or said that. I know you didn't. But certainly there, for a long time, there was a certain attitude towards traditional music that wasn't healthy, was not good.
I quite agree, but in fact the converse is now the case. The prestige that attaches to Irish traditional music is enormous. The publicity which surrounds it, the ballast which it enjoys financially and culturally, is phenomenal. As I said earlier, it's virtually the global signature of Irishness, far more than the Irish language. Now, that is an extremely healthy and fortuitous development, but it doesn't mean that there aren't other musical traditions in this country. It doesn't mean that there aren't other musical preoccupations in this country. And it certainly doesn't mean that traditional music is entitled, as it were, to screen out the rest of what's going on. And I've never suggested that it is. I hope Tony Quinn doesn't think so. But I do think that an encyclopedia is bound to reflect a much wider community of musical interest than any one tradition can represent. And by the way, if I may just return to something that Toner said with regard to the omission of individual artists, there's no question that for every classical singer or indeed traditional musician that is an Emer, we could have added 10 more. And in many cases, extremely distinguished musicians such as Alan Smale are not in there. They're not in there as an act of deliberate exclusion. They're not in there as a means of ranking the artists that are in there and aren't in there. Because when it came to deciding who actually would register in Emer, it was partly a question of research and it was partly a question of trying to find artists who would represent orchestral or other forms of music. The idea that the whole thing is about people who spring to mind now in the, you know, period in which Emer was conceived is mistaken.
Tona Quinn, surely that's a fair point. You know, it was never going to be a who's who of any form of music. It has to be a really significant addition to our understanding, our reading of the map of Irish music. And, you know, with publications like Fintan Vanley's Companion to Traditional Music and other books and the Journal of Music and all that you publish online, it helps to make this much larger map and shape our understanding of the complexity of music in Ireland.
The point I was making was that, you know, of course you can't include everyone, but that's why it should have had a digital first strategy to at least reduce the possibility of people being excluded. So I think the editors have underestimated the world we're living in now and the importance of a digital first strategy. Secondly, regarding art music, none of the explanations that Harry provides there are satisfactory to me. It's not a neutral term, regardless of what some musicologists in the world, what terminology they're using. I think they need to bring their discourse into the 21st century, and that language is so out of date.
Will you be reviewing the encyclopedia in the Journal of Music? And does it upset you, for instance, that the Journal of Music, or JMI, is not included as a reference in the encyclopedia?
No, it doesn't upset me at all. I thought it was ridiculous, really. But the encyclopedia relies very heavily on the Journal of Music, and so that doesn't bother me at all. A little bit surprising, but it doesn't bother me. Will I be reviewing it? There's always that possibility.
Tona Quinn, thanks indeed for joining us from Galway. Well, of course, Harry White says in his introduction to the encyclopedia that he hopes it will provoke debate, and I think it's certainly doing that. Harry, another song you've asked us to play is Paul Brady's Nobody Knows. I suppose an appropriate one after that conversation. Let's have a listen to that. Paul Brady there with Nobody Knows. Mark Fitzgerald, co-executive editor of the Encyclopedia of Music, is also with us in studio this evening. Mark, tell me about your major area of interest and expertise in coming to this project.
Well, in terms of my own research, what I'm heavily involved in is looking at contemporary music. In terms of what I was doing for the encyclopedia, it was far more than that. The job I had was essentially running a sort of central sorting office for the entire project. When I started, I had essentially a computer and a very, very large list of possible headwords, which was coming in from all the different editors, subject editors across the project. And so from that moment on, everything, every commissioning letter, every communication between editors, contributors, and so on, everything went through my office. So I'd say it was the central sorting office for everything. All the articles came in through my office. They went from me then on to various editors, and then they came back via my office and so on. I was a contact point with the publisher as well throughout the project, and worked with various editors at various points, devising strategies, sorting out particular problems, and keeping the whole board informed throughout, in between the various meetings we had, of any potential problems that were coming into view at any point.
And did many potential problems come to view along the way?
Well, I mean, I suppose one of the things is that this project is the biggest project of its sort that's ever occurred in Ireland. And so we were basically making it up as we went along in many ways, because, you know, there was no simple template for this. And we did notice certain things as the project progressed. Just linking back to some of the conversation you've just been having, it was clear, for example, in some areas, in the popular music area in particular, that it was by times difficult to get contributors to actually write the articles. The project hadn't got funding to pay anyone to write an article for. So this has been written entirely by people just for the love of the music rather than for any payment. And there was not a large enough field of writers, it would seem. That's certainly the problem that was coming back to me from the popular music editors. So we had issues like that, which also, I think, play a certain role in what the final product looks like.
You also, of course, wrote entries, for instance, on Gerald Barry, one of our great modern composers, and somebody who was featured on this programme several times. You know, one of, again, quite a unique figure in modern Irish music.
Absolutely. A person who writes extraordinary music and is a very important figure, not just nationally, but internationally as well. And it is very striking that despite the impact he's had internationally, there's actually very little written on Gerald's music. And so when I went to write this article, a lot of what I was writing was involved looking at this music for the first time in any sort of detail, and trying to draw some sort of picture of an overall view of what this music is like for the first time. Certainly in terms of the work list that appears at the end, that was the first time that someone had actually drawn together an accurate work list and checked it with Gerald and made sure that it was actually accurate. There wasn't one available from either of his publishers at that point in time.
An extract there from Gerald Barry's opera version of The Importance of Being Earnest. The new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland, which we're discussing on this evening's programme, ranges over opera, jazz, classical music, traditional and more. As Mihalo Suruwan said in his recent review, it turns a labyrinth into a readable map. But how fair is its representation of the different categories? More on that in a moment. This is Arts Tonight. We're looking at the new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland, edited by Harry White and Barra Boydell. A rich and diverse array of music in its more than 1,000 pages, as you'll hear in this short musical mosaic drawn from its pages on classical, jazz, traditional and rock. Some of the music referenced there in the pages of the new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland. Interesting to consider how much space is given to those different musical genres in the encyclopedia, and one man has been literally counting the words and the percentages. Fintan Baddeley is editor of the Companion to Irish Traditional Music, and he's been telling me about his reading and his findings.
The first thing you look for is A to Z, who's in it, who's not in it. Then you try and work out what's the relative balance of stuff, of information between genres to find out is this thing a fairly balanced book. And from past experience and from doing a lot of reviews over the years, the only way to do this in an encyclopedia, in fact, is to get out the ruler and the calculator, and which I did. I'd done it in my own book, The Companion to Traditional Music, because you have to do that after a book is published. You have no idea what's in it. You have to check. Percentage-wise, making roughly 69% of the material is kind of classical music, established music, church music, etc., musicology and all of that. 25% is traditional. 6% is rock and pop. The first thing I was surprised at there, I suppose, was the volume of traditional music in the book, because at the conference where this book was launched, the main editor of the book was incredibly dismissive and trivialising of traditional music. There's a complete about turn here, which is brilliant to see it, because it's a book which goes into lots of libraries, and there's a quarter of the material is on traditional. You would expect that amount, I suppose, on 69% of it, or roughly that, on classical music or church music, since those are the documented forms of music in the country. Traditional music has really only been heavily documented in the last 30 years or so.
Of course, you had been one of the people who had been questioning of the likely nature of the encyclopedia before it came out, with Barry O'Shea in the Journal of Music, or GMI as it was at the time, I think. And also you'd been critical of Harry White for what he said at that conference. But now am I hearing that you were actually fairly happy with the representation of traditional music in the encyclopedia?
The representation that's here is good, and there are some terrific articles, particularly by the editor of traditional music in the book, Adrian Scahill. He has wonderful pieces there on recording and broadcasting, etc. Others by Martin Darling on aesthetics. Like, there's a great swathe of 11 or 12 pages there of analytical stuff, which is actually wonderful. It's an awful pity that Adrian Scahill, who's the traditional music editor, he's not even mentioned in there's not in the credits. There's no biography of him. This fellow's responsible for a quarter of this book, and he's not mentioned. He doesn't exist. I don't know whether that's oversight or editorial decision.
Is Adrian Scahill from NUI Maynooth?
NUI Maynooth, yeah. And But there are, of course, there are omissions. I mean, and like I've I pointed to the different reviews I've done of this book, but my attitude to the book isn't critical. My attitude has always been supportive. The only question I ever asked at the very beginning was, in a country of very little resources, a book which I edited on traditional music, companion to traditional music, if that gets it's subsidised by the state to do a dictionary of traditional music, why wouldn't somebody just do a dictionary which actually is just of classical and church music? There's also one needed on rock or pop music, which would be every bit as big as any of the three. But to bring them all together, to me, always seemed like an overambitious project. That said, I mean, like, I welcome the book. I think other people have also said this. It might have been better just to focus on the one genre, then you could give a due weight to the different elements of the particular genre. Tom Munley, the song collector, once said, he quoted somebody to me when I was doing the companion, he says, another encyclopedia, I suppose the first edition will be the proof copy.
Fintan, we're going to play one song that you've chosen that isn't in the encyclopedia, and I suppose for you it's an example of maybe a tilt within the encyclopedia that distorts something of a particular map or landscape of music in Ireland.
Well, as I said, the absence of stuff to do with the history of the last 75 years of the country, the absence of that is a fairly critical absence. The song I was thinking that might embody some of that is, which also brings in regional, kind of regional gutsiness or life or actual like vigour that there is in traditional music, is a song called The Boys of Barnes Raja by Sigerson Clifford from Kerry. But it embodies something of like the strength and the power of and passion of rural music making, singing, and the song, of course, it's an old air, The Flower of Sweet Strabane. But the song itself embodies everything. Immigration, which is not mentioned, it also embodies republicanism, references to it, but just a terrific song.
The Boys of Bornish Roger there, sung by Mick Flynn from Milton Malbay in County Clare. Harry White, what's your response to Fintan Valley's take there on the encyclopaedia? 68% of space, he says, given to classical and church music and musicology, 25% to traditional, and about 6-7% to pop, rock and country. It's a very particular way, is it not, of looking at the landscapes of music in this country.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how Fintan arrived at that percentage, but I suspect, I hope, in any case, that he's talking about number of words as distinct from number of articles, because it certainly doesn't transpire in terms of the number of articles that as little as, what, did you say 7% in terms of traditions, or
25%. No, he says he's actually, and as you heard there, I mean, he's saying he's very pleased that traditional music gets significant portion of
I'm very glad to hear that, but in fact, we were very conscious of how large traditional music looms. The big challenge with Emer, and I come back to this again, I think it's very, very important with regard to either endorsement or dismay with regard to different musical interests in this country, is that it is not simply there to reflect the current status quo of music in Ireland. It's certainly partly there to do that, but it is also there to, as it were, reveal layers of musical activity and practice and experience which otherwise would lie dormant.
And that's what's fascinating. One of the many fascinating things about it is that it travels through time.
Well, I think
you discover so much. I certainly discovered so much I didn't know.
Yeah.
It is this constantly revealing work that I think will continue to give for a very long time.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that really was our chief hope. I mean, the idea that X isn't in there or Y isn't in there is a game that could be played from now on until the next edition comes out. And as soon as that edition comes out, there will be the same chorus of approval and disapproval. You could set your watch by it. On the other hand, what you can't quite hope to achieve in a second edition, I think, is the extent to which this first edition of Emer actually opens up ground that has lain fallow for such a long time. And I think that's what makes it interesting. For example, one facet of Emer that particularly struck me, because I had nothing really directly to do with it, was how it re-engages with the Dublin music trade. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable how Emer reflects and brings forward in the 19th and indeed in the 18th century the amount of instrument making, keyboard instrument making particularly, pianos and organs in Dublin and in fact throughout the country. And, a lot of that has simply fallen by the wayside, that sense of what the music trade was like in Ireland and particularly in the main cities. The other thing is that when it comes even to contemporary music, the reception of contemporary art music is so poor It's so denuded and it's so eclipsed that Emer can do a lot, I think, for bringing forward the notion that there are practices of music alongside traditional and popular musical practice. In fact, we encountered quite a lot of scepticism with regard to popular music with an excellent popular music editor, Maeve Ní Bhorhain, who was exemplary, I think Mark would agree, in her professionalism and in her scholarly keenness to represent popular musical culture. But she would be the first to admit that, in a sense, the more famous musicians are, it's almost a rule that the less serious scholarship they attract. And we had to be very careful not simply to represent popular music culture now, but to look at it, for instance, in the 40s and 50s. And Emer does that very well, I think. It brings forward what kind of music people were listening to and dancing to in the 40s and 50s, which is now quite a long time ago. And similarly, Emer brings forward issues of Irish musical migration, which people tend to forget about. Again, obviously, the tradition looms large in that regard. But if you look at the remarkable, I think, essay on music in America, especially in the 19th century, you'll see that there's a great deal more to it. It is a wonderful essay. And I think it brings forward, you know, the Irish representation of stereotypes and so on through the agency of music in a way that a lot of people have not been aware of.
Mark Fitzgerald, a piece of music you wanted us to hear was Stiff Little Fingers and Alternative Ulster, which again, I suppose, is an example of what the encyclopedia contains. And I suppose that fascinating moment in Northern Ireland where music became kind of punkish and with an alternative politics and vision.
Absolutely. For me, this represents quite a lot of things that get covered in one way or another in the encyclopedia. First of all, there's something from Northern Ireland as opposed to Southern Ireland. And certainly it was another of those things we were quite conscious of, that in terms of work that's already available, there hasn't been as much work done on music in Northern Ireland. And so that's an area that still needs a lot more work and a lot more mapping. Secondly, as you say, this is where punk arrives into Northern Ireland, and it intermingles with a very difficult political situation. And, you know, politics is a very big topic in Ireland, and music and politics have interacted in very interesting and different ways right across the different genres. So if you're talking about popular music, you have quite a number of bands and singers who have had a very distinctive political message apart from their sort of musical one. Whereas in other spheres, sometimes you don't get that. For example, in the classical stroke art music world, a lot of the time, it seems like it exists almost in a political vacuum recently, with the exception of, you know, someone like Raymond Dean, who actually has written pieces with a political message, apart from being involved in politics himself. So this piece, as I say, brings together several things. There's an article on the band itself, there's an article on music and politics, and it represents, as we said, punk arriving into Northern Ireland, mixing with this political message, and the sort of effect that this has in terms of youth culture in Northern Ireland, where suddenly there's a slightly different alternative rather than just sort of sectarian divisions, but there's a musical one which can sort of transpire or sort of transcend these more sectarian divisions. And it's a good tune as well.
Stiff Little Fingers there with Alternative Ulster, a choice from the new Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland by Mark Fitzgerald, one of our guests on the programme this evening. Now, what's the response of an institution like the Royal Irish Academy of Music to the new encyclopedia? The Academy has obviously made a major contribution to musical life in this country over the centuries. I visited the Academy on Westland Row in Dublin recently and met the director, Deborah Kelleher, who gave me her response to the encyclopedia.
I think it's a fantastic state of the nation, almost, that it is the collection of what did Ireland achieve, what did it do, what maybe did it fail to do in terms of art, music, primarily in Ireland, and also kind of mapping its context to Great Britain and Europe. For me, the value is scholars of the future and even Irish people interrogating their own work can now benchmark it against a really comprehensive survey of what went on. I think the other thing that I like about it is the over 230 or so contributors. It's very scholarly, very factual, but then you also have some wonderful moments in which the kind of the writing has a certain kind of beauty or there's a certain personal element to it. And I found that brought it out of something rather dry into something that actually became a bit of a page turner.
Are you surprised that when the amount of text is analysed, that it breaks down as being 68%, you know, classical church music, musicology, 25% traditional music, and I think about 8% then kind of popular music and rock. I mean, does that is that in a way a fair landscape of this vast myriad of music and music making in this country?
I think if you think about the fact that, I suppose, art music in Ireland started maybe with the chants of the 11th century, you're talking about kind of the bones of a thousand or so, more than a thousand years. So commercial popular music is a relatively newcomer to this. So I suppose the first point is I'm not that surprised that the percentages are heavily in the area of art music. The other thing is the people who envisaged this and compiled it and it was their vision would be more in the musicology of art music or even a little bit more traditional music. I suppose the question I have is this the area for commercial music in this particular book? Of course it could be, but it also could be something that has its own wonderful tome on itself. I wonder if the people that would pick up the encyclopedia as it is that the market for people who would be interested in the commercial? Is it better actually to separate the two? It's a question rather than something I've resolved in my mind, but I suppose the short answer is no, I would not be surprised.
In browsing through the encyclopedia, were there particular entries that caught your eye? Did you learn? I mean, I've just been, you know, spending some amount of time reading my way through it. It will take a long time to get right through. But I'm sure, I mean, there's so much richness in there. I'm sure there were one or two things that caught your attention.
There were. I mean, the librarian, Philip Shields, in the Academy was telling me that there were a steady stream of people in looking at the encyclopedia, probably looking for themselves and looking for their colleagues and perhaps guessing a few ages, putting that one to bed. But for me, I tended to look at Academy people just out of interest. And one really came out for me, which was about John O'Sullivan, who was a harpsichordist, a musician. He worked in the Academy. And it was an article by Andrew Robinson. And it was very factual. It gave the information. But at the end, it had a lovely sentence. It said about John O'Sullivan, his public persona was retiring, but in private he was often brilliantly witty and always a consummate musician. So for someone that I had maybe met once or twice in my life, I thought this was a wonderful record for him, that he did have a significant contribution to make in music, but then it just gave a little bit more and there was maybe even a little bit of kind of warmth in the article, which I particularly liked.
Obviously, many people from the Academy here present in the encyclopedia, many of the lives, much of the music that has come from and come through here. I mean, and that must be a cause of celebration for you.
It was fantastic. I mean, the article on the Academy itself by Denise Neary was super because it gives a real sense of the Academy's growth and how the Academy came to be, because it's an unusual place. We were founded under an act. We got a royal status. So there's a very kind of strange richness. But at the heart of the Academy, it was music practitioners who were really committed to developing systematic music education. So by almost decade by decade, Denise Neary's article goes through this. And for me, as the leader of the Academy, when I'm going to be going out and making some speeches to people who don't know about it, this is going to be where I start again.
Is there a particular piece of music associated with the Academy here that you would like us to listen to?
Well, I think the thing that gratified me the most when I was looking at the Academy article was the mention of Charles Villiers Stanford, who was actually a student of the Royal Irish Academy of Music and then went on to found the Royal College of Music in London. So he was a really substantial figure. So for me, a piece by Charles Villiers Stanford would be my number one.
Charles Villiers Stanford's Irish Rhapsody number 4 there. Harry White, something I've often thought about, you know, the way people comment on how musical they think Ireland is, you know, how strong a pulse music seems to carry in our culture. I wonder from your intensive work on this project and also your international connections and comparisons over the years, do you think that's true, that we are a particularly musical culture, or is it all a bit of a romantic self-delusion?
The fairest answer I can give to that is that the reputation that Ireland enjoys for a musical culture is justified but confined. And I think that now, as in, you know, 2014, a kind of vox pop response to music in Ireland tends to focus upon commercial or traditional music. I have to say that we are singular in Europe in our neglect of art music, certainly by comparison with other forms of artistic endeavour. I mean, it is to me extraordinary that in Ireland, alone of any European country I can think of, that it is simply not necessary to know anything about contemporary art music, Irish or otherwise. And indeed, even with regard to classical music in the historical sense, as to say, 18th, 19th century music, romantic music, it doesn't tend to figure on the landscape. And that's partly because the Irish literary tradition is so rich and tends to be the touchstone when it comes to quote-unquote high art. Nobody has the slightest difficulty with regard to literature, not the smallest, in distinguishing between different traditions or actually attending upon the notion of art. Not at all. In fact, when it comes to theatre, when it comes to poetry, when it comes to fiction, Ireland stands proud over the idea of an art culture. When it comes to music, however, there is a genuine sense of reservation, a genuine sense of hesitancy surrounding music other than traditional music and popular music. And it's even more interesting than that, because I think that in some regard, since the revival of traditional music in the 1950s, and especially since the Chieftains and the passing of that music, as it were, into the global slipstream, there are many people who hold a very interesting point of view, which is that traditional music is the art music of Ireland. Now, that's not a view that seems to me at all responsible to actual musical practice, but it's a plausible view, particularly because it's one that's constantly endorsed by the cultural status quo.
Well, not everyone might agree, but of course the debate will go on. In terms of the encyclopedia, I have to say myself that I think it's an invaluable addition to our reading and understanding of music in Ireland. Yes, there are omissions and gaps, and it has a particular emphasis on what we might call classical music. But some of this can be addressed in future editions, and certainly in an online version. And it will, as we heard there, give rise to continuing debate. The Encyclopedia of Music in Ireland is published by UCD Press and should be available in most bookshops. Harry White, thank you. Thanks also to Mark Fitzgerald, to Tony Quinn, Fintan Valley and Deborah Kelleher. We leave you with a song I love, a song featuring in the Encyclopedia, also a favourite of Harry White's, Thomas Moore's She Is Far From the Land, where Sarah Curran pines for Robert Emmet, history captured in the heart of song and here in the voice of John McCormick. From all of us, good night.